You know, you don't wear a bulletproof vest to many jobs. Police officers do, of course, soldiers, journalists in dangerous areas of the world, and in many cases, abortion doctors. In a wide-reaching story this weekend in the New York Times Magazine, Emily Bazelon offers a look at what she calls the new abortion providers. They are younger doctors who are attempting to move abortion back into hospitals. Right now, about 90% of abortions take place in clinics, a statistic which indicates to many people that abortion doctors and pro-choice supporters have lost vital ground in a raging culture war. Emily Bazelon joins us now. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning.
All right, let's trace what happened. Roe v. Wade happens, making abortion legal in the United States. The assumption was it would move into the mainstream, so to speak, but it didn't. Why not?
Right. Well, so this is 1973, and this ruling comes down making abortion legal across the country. And at the time, a lot of OBGYNs expected abortion to become part of people's practices in their doctor's offices. But the problem was that abortion had been stigmatized in the 60s and early 70s when it was not legal. And it was hard to overcome that stigma in the 70s. And so feminist activists stepped in to the breach and set up these freestanding clinics, which in many ways have been an enormous success story. Most abortions in the country take place there. They generally provide very good care for their patients. The problem is that because they stand alone, these clinics, they were easier to attack. And so that was where the violence against abortion providers happened, particularly in the 1980s. And then that, in turn, made it more marginal within mainstream medicine.
So the clinics might as well have had bullseyes painted on them.
Precisely. And it's, you know, it's sort of this, from the point of view of the clinics, a really unfortunate consequence of the work they were doing, and a function of the way in which some anti-abortion extremists, like Operation Rescue, you know, decided to use violence as a tactic.
And is this a function of the hospital management saying, you know, we don't want this in our building because we're concerned we could become a target, or is this individual doctors making decisions?
You know, I think both of those things have happened. I think that medicine, just to sort of generalize for a moment, tends to be a fairly conservative profession in the sense that people are wary of controversy. And so the fear has been that because abortion brings controversy, it's not that people are anti-choice in medicine or are looking even so closely at it. They're just a little wary. And so the question is how to turn that dynamic around.
Well, you talk in your article about sort of a counteroffensive to the anti-abortion people who attack these clinics. Tell us a little bit about that.
Begins in the mid-90s when a Council of Medical Education, which really stands for the medical establishment, decided that abortion training and residency programs had become so rare, it was down to 12% of the countries of the programs in the country, that this body had to intervene. And it decided to require OBGYN residents to train to learn abortions. That changed the dynamic. That gave medical schools an incentive to establish these programs. And then through a couple of very successful efforts that are run out of the University of California at San Francisco, these training programs have really taken off across the country and are now rooted in dozens of universities.
Well, that's interesting. You know, I'm wondering if there's any precedent for a medical procedure to be so to have a narrative that is so unlike the rest of what's going on in, say, a medical facility like a hospital. It's really fascinating to see how all of these small sort of nuances have huge effects on where abortions are done.
Right, exactly. And then where abortions are done start to drive, you know, the sort of social norms about abortion, because once you know that all the patients going into a particular building are women who might be getting an abortion, that becomes, an appealing place to protest against. Whereas if abortions take place in doctors' offices and primary care clinics and hospitals where you don't know who's sitting in the waiting room, someone could be there because of a sinus infection. Suddenly, those are not places that are attractive for protesters.
You know, Emily, on the one hand, you talk about doctors not wanting to be identified as, quote unquote, an abortion doctor. And you talk about people who are, you know, trying to muster the courage to be in this field. Tell us a little bit about what goes on in the mind of these doctors who make these decisions.
You know, they really BC providing abortion and being very expert in contraception as a seamless part of doing comprehensive women's health care. They are just trying to take care of their patients. And so, you know, we were just talking about how abortion is treated so differently and marked from other parts of medicine. They're trying to do the opposite, to really make it just not a big deal. If they have a patient who comes in and is pregnant, they want to be able to offer her all the options. If she wants to keep her baby, they will take care of her during pregnancy and deliver the baby. But if she wants to terminate the pregnancy, they can also do that in their own offices so that they don't have to send her somewhere else. And for some women patients, that's a very comforting possibility.
In talking to these doctors, do you get the sense that they feel in a very palpable way that they're risking their lives doing this?
You know, yes and no. I mean, this is sort of a really interesting question in this piece. I think that a lot of these doctors have successfully constructed their professional lives so that they really don't feel that way. They're working in settings where things are very calm. They're, you know, going to work every day. They're just doing their jobs, and it's not that big a deal. They're sort of living out the aspiration that they have. On the other hand, you know, Dr. George Tiller, abortion provider in Kansas, was murdered in 2009. That's very much on people's minds. You know, it's not as if they can pretend that the people who oppose abortion, you know, will never commit another act of violence. So I think that there's sort of this dual sense of reality there for them.
Emily Bazelon, who is a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine, her piece appears this weekend. It's quite an interesting look at something you may not think so much about. Emily, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.